Welcome to Couve.com. I'm your host, David Madore. Today we have our state treasurer candidate, Sharon Hanick. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you very much, David, for having me here today and meeting all the viewers in this area, Vancouver area.
You're welcome. You are the only candidate, I believe, that actually made it to our general ballot because you were a write-in candidate, right?
Yes, it was a different pathway for me. I was not really had made that decision to run when the filing date came, which is earlier this year in May of 2012. I also had children graduating from high school and college on the same weekend, and the state convention of which my county was sponsor for, and just a lot of things going around. It was not on my radar. I totally assumed that another qualified candidate would be stepping up to the plate. In fact, we thought that the person who ran 4 years ago was going to be running again.
So it was a very crazy, busy time for you. And that person did not step forward.
No. So what that ended up was left a void. And so there was a Democrat running unopposed. And some folks said, hey, we would like to have choice. And we want to have a Republican on that spot. So I came forward and became the write-in candidate and received 32,000 votes out of all 39 counties.
That is great. I love to hear success stories when somebody steps up and accomplishes something like that. The only other candidate that I can remember that actually made it in a write-in campaign was Linda Smith years ago.
Yes, she was one of my role models for going into this, and I want to thank the folks of this area, folks of Clark County, of Cowlitz County. They were the ones that helped me make it to the ballot.
Well, congratulations. That was good. Now there's two candidates now running for state treasurer.
Correct.
And you are one of two. And for you to be able to make it to the general election must have been a surprise to the street. They probably wouldn't feel passionately about state treasurer. So help us to understand the significance, the role, the importance of state treasurer. What does state treasurer do?
As I explored the possibility of what the state treasurer does, the responsibilities and the role in all of the system of governance that Washington State has, I felt that state treasurer, on one hand, acts like the bank of Washington State. The banker where monies are deposited, they make sure that the checks are written, that there is investments that are being handled correctly so that we have really good rates of return and that we can give money back to the people and the pension plans and the labor and industry and the get tuition plans, that the money is being invested well so that there will be money in the future. On the other hand, there's also the bonds. It's like the lending, making sure that we have loans to fund the projects that we need. And that would be where we have to make sure we have a decent bond rating system and just the lending mechanisms, and also be the conduit to help all the counties and other local governments have investments and bonds. That's on one hand. The other thing I bring to this, I believe, is that I have 9 years of perhaps money being missing, that there seems to be no authority, no one really stepping up saying, I will be responsible and making sure that we are securing and safeguarding the assets and the monies of Washington State.
Does the state treasurer work with the state auditor?
The auditor, if you think of this as a business, you have your accounting department, you have your board of directors, and then you have every once in a while an independent third party auditor coming in to say, review the books and tell you what's going on. That is the role of the auditor's office. On the other hand, if there are problems, then whose responsibility is it to fix those problems? That goes up to the board of directors, or it goes down to the accounting department, the accounting system. Now let's imagine a situation where the board of directors say, I don't care. I don't care if those problems are fixed or not. And on the hand, I do have a newspaper article here that says the Office of Financial Management Director has said, we don't have to do audits anymore. We don't have to comply with these things. So if we have leadership that will not do the audits, will not improve the system, even though our wonderful auditing office is pointing out you've got these problems, then whose job is it? And that is where I want to bring one more layer of procedures to the treasurers, just because if I'm going to be in charge It says, as according to RCW 4308, I am in charge of effective cash management of public funds. Then I believe that is under the purview of the Treasurer's Office to ensure that the deposits that are handed over to the government agencies actually make it to my bank account.
So you're a eyes open, ensuring that the lights are turned on, ensuring there's accountability,
accountability,
make sure that there's processes in place.
Right.
Who has the enforcement power? Suppose that there's something very wrong. The auditor is going to be able to red flag that. But
ideally, it would be the governor's office.
So the governor is the one to actually enforce something that's really very wrong. So the auditor will say, hey, if there is something wrong, mm-hmm. they'll catch it and say, hey, we got something very wrong here. It looks wrong. But are they the ones to actually investigate it, or are they the ones to enforce it?
No, that's where there's a loophole in the enforcement policies. Back in 2004, I was actually using my accounting. I have a CPA experience from 1980 to 1998. And then I had tax and accounting experience, and currently I'm a tax accountant. So I bring with me this level of detailed accounting practices, but then also the overview, because I used to be an auditor myself. So I can do both ways. I can see the big picture, and I can also look at the details. When I look at the details, though, I see that there is no one enforcing it, which would be the governor's office. I went in once and I found some errors in the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. I wrote a letter to the governor's office saying, can you fix these errors? And the response I got was, it's not my problem, it's the auditor's. But then I went to the auditor's office and sat with them, and they said, we have no enforcement powers. So then I sat there thinking, whose job is it? And that's where now I feel that my family life, my children are all grown now. I can step forward and serve the state of Washington in the role of not just being that banker who makes sure the investments, make sure that the loans are being made, but that extra step of ensuring the integrity of the accounting structure of Washington
State. So you can be proactive when it comes to ensuring, safeguarding the public trust there. Okay. When it comes to the contrast between the two candidates, mm-hmm. there are two candidates in this race. The other fellow is Jim McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
How do your qualifications and your priorities differ?
Well, I took a look not just at the previous incumbent, Jim McIntyre, who's been there for 4 years, but to his predecessor, and I feel that the role of treasurer can shape the guidelines on the responsibilities. The previous treasurer did take into consideration some of the bookkeeping elements, some of the detailed things that I'm talking about. The current treasurer's background is 14 years of government service, in that 10 years serving in the legislature, and 4 years as the state treasurer. Prior to that, he was a teacher of economics at the University of Washington. So there is no public sector experience. And private sector experience. There's no boots on the ground having helped small businesses. That's where I will bring a different viewpoint, because I don't think inside the box. There's a way of thinking in Olympia. I don't think that way. I understand how they think because I had to work with legislators for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to bring into it another outside way of thinking that maybe we could start correcting some deficiencies mm-hmm. in the system.
Okay. Just a specific case here. We have in our area here, Clark County, a very large project that is really under, right now, there's a lot of questions regarding it. We've had a forensic accountant locally here that has really raised some red mm-hmm. flags and is calling for an investigation by someone that has the proper jurisdiction. The state treasurer, completely silent, not responding. The state auditor, completely silent, no involvement. And in fact, no one is stepping forward mm-hmm. to answer that call. Should you at least look into it or even audit? There's nothing.
Uh-huh.
What happens when you have a state agency that is called into question, that has handled $160 million, and you have somebody that's mm-hmm. certified as a fraud investigator saying, you really ought to look into this?
This would be similar to the situation I ran into with the education system. One thing to look at into is, are we dealing with 100% state money or are we dealing with federal money?
It's a mix.
If you have federal money involvement, then there is always that level potentially of going to the Office of Inspector Generals, taking it up to the next level, because chances are the servicing of that federal contract is not being done. So I'm looking at it also in elements, not just that there's potential fraud, but what are the violations? And then you have to kind of break down whose area is it for the responsibility of the violations. We have an Attorney General who should be our enforcer. But several years ago, and I believe possibly under the leadership of the current governor, they changed the role of Attorney General not to be the proactive defender of rights for the people, but the defense attorney for the state agencies.
Which is really redundant with the state Attorney General.
So as such, the Attorney General is often not, a bit reluctant to be proactive at doing investigations. So you would think that you can go to the Attorney General, you would go to the governor. But if they choose not to act, there really is not a good recourse except to try to break it down. The treasurer's office is more of it's not an auditor. The auditor would be the one to audit. I would just think that if I see deficiencies in the system, more of from a system approach, not a fraud approach, that's where I believe would be the responsibility, but not necessarily to investigate and fraud. Again, if there is federal contracts that are in violation, then the treasurer's job to make sure that the monies are being spent to the letter of the law. Mm-hmm. And that could be under that jurisdiction.
We do see a contrast between the state treasurer's office, their role in Oregon, and the treasurer's office in Washington for this project, mm-hmm. the CRC light rail mm-hmm. tolling project I've been talking about. The state treasurer's office of Oregon, mm-hmm. even though it's driven by Washington, has proactively looked at the numbers that have been used mm-hmm. and promoted to promote this project raised a red flag and said, there's a $500 million hole here.
Again,
this does not work.
It's not complying to the requirements of whatever the laws passed or the federal laws. Mm-hmm. And that could be then repayment of funds. And there's going to be problems on the state if we don't get that fixed.
It would be very good for the people to be able to know that mm-hmm. there's someone proactive in a position of authority. And it sounds like you're the office that you are running for. You see that mm-hmm. as a proactive office. Right now we got silence, Jim McIntyre, mm-hmm. the other fellow
right.
that you're challenging here, is the incumbent.
Correct.
And so what we have from Jim McIntyre right now is silence.
In discussions that we have had, and we finished several joint discussions with editorial boards, I feel that the current treasurer, he senses his role to be primarily one that makes sure that we have great bonds and that we have good lending capacity and smooth transitions for loans. I do think, though, that when you think about bonds, that's loans. We should not depend and rely on loans to be paying for projects and to be, it's not sustainable to have borrowings. We need to have self-sufficiency. We need to have revenues that can make the income, not relying on outside factors. That's just a philosophical difference that I see between us.
And it is a rare voice, especially in government these days, when we have $16 trillion mm-hmm. debt billion or a trillion and a half
and
deficit, increasing that debt every year at the federal level, and debt being the answer to everything, it
correct.
Seems, which does become unsustainable, even for our transportation, all the gas taxes. Two-thirds mm-hmm. of all of our gas taxes collected are only going for debt service because they spend it all up front and there's nothing left.
There's another type of debt. First, I would also say that what I see is that too much, the inside Olympia way of thinking is that when you have all the special interests come and they create this budget and say, we need this amount of cash, the solution is we'll look at our shrinking revenues, but then we're going to add on the debt and we're going to add on raising taxes. I don't believe that's the way that we should be handling state government, but that's a policy issue and not necessarily something that the treasurer can do. But what the treasurer can do is that in looking at the debt, when you talked about transportation, there's a new type of transportation bond, which is 100% relying on the federal government to pay back the interest on the bonds. Yeah. They're called Garvey bonds. And the current state treasurer has committed Washington State to these Garvey bonds at a point in time when the federal transportation budget had not even been voted on yet. So again, this reliance on the federal government to solve our debt problem, especially when the federal government just got downgraded on their bond rating, is going to have a negative impact on Washington State.
Yeah, with so much money being borrowed from other nations like China, and the precarious position that states and cities are in. You got California that if they were a business, they would have been bankrupt long ago. And even whole cities are being having declared bankrupt in California. So debt is a not something that I cherish.
It shouldn't be the solution. Shouldn't be the way to go to solve problems.
Yes, and I'm glad to hear that philosophy. It would be a step in the right direction, I believe, for the way we want to go. Well, when you have some interesting background, your father and you have some. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's
possibly
an unusual story.
The reason for stepping out and running for a statewide position, despite that, my whole background has been just being a mom, serving on little leagues and volunteer work locally. My father created a feeling in me that we need to be serving our country, and I get that possibly because he himself was someone that after World War II, during World War II, was one of the Japanese American men that was drafted into the Army and served in the military intelligence. As that, he became one of the, quote, if you call it, decoders or interpreters of Japanese documents. Then he went overseas after the end of the war and served under MacArthur, helping to draft the Japanese Constitution. Because he had the linguistic ability, because he was one of the first Japanese-American attorneys in America, he was able to be the liaison between the Japanese government and the U.S. government. Hence, I grew up in Japan under this umbrella where he was the liaison of the status of forces agreements and work between the two governments. And I grew up with these Supreme Court justices, their children as my friends.
So that's quite a heritage. He must be real proud of him.
Yes, very much.
Great. So you are you're thankful for your American citizenship here.
Yes, and he made sure, and despite the fact that my mother was interned in camp, my parents were very proud to be an American, and they wanted to make sure that their kids, which would be me and my brother and sister, were raised loving America.
So during the war that was started by Pearl Harbor,
correct.
Your mother was actually put into an internment camp?
Correct. In Minidoka, Idaho.
For how long?
I believe my grandparents were there for a couple years. She herself was released early to find work in Washington, D.C., while my uncles, her brothers, served in the 442nd, the most decorated army in World War II.
Wow. And yet there's no resentment or unforgiveness or anything like that?
No, I don't feel that.
They never
shared that. They never brought that onto
American the American citizens,
right.
And that's character. So thank you for that heart, that attitude. Are there what is the number one issue that you feel like, have you already talked about it?
Well, just the fact of bringing more leadership and accountability, and it's not so much that I would get in there and fix everything, but I could provide the leadership in saying, take a look at these things that are not being done as per the auditor's office, and let's try to start working towards ensuring the public that their funds are safe, that their monies are safe, that if you have on the books that you've got 25 computers, you have 25 computers. Those are the types of things that I would like, just an overview of the integrity of the accounting system and making sure assets are secure.
So you care about that deeply, it sounds like.
Yes.
Got some passion there. Okay, would you like to take a few minutes and talk directly to the voters?
Yes. The primary thing I would like to say to the voters is that if you want to have accountability in Olympia, it's time to vote for accountant. We have too many public policy officials, people that have been inside Olympia with this certain kind of mindset of doing business the way it always has been done. And I think times are changing, and that we have a future that is uncertain. And with that uncertainty, we need to change the way Olympia does business. And part of that is how they handle their money. So again, if you want to have accountability in Olympia, you have to vote for the accountant. Thank you, and I appreciate your vote.
And you have a website, Sharon?
It's www.sharonhannock.com, and I have a Facebook that's a Sharon Hannock for State Treasurer.
And that is spelled?
S-H-A-R-O-N H-A-N-E-K, as in don't panic, vote Hanek.
Okay, that's how you pronounce it. Very, very good. Any other way to reach you, email or phone, that you want to be able to share?
Email is SharonHanek@gmail.com. And if you'd like to phone, it's 253-854-7075. I'm from the Tacoma area.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Sharon. It's a pleasure to discuss with you.